Attention all personnel. You got it. You got it. You found the most listened to radio station. Jackalope Radio.
When the strange becomes reality, when the light becomes dark, when you open your eyes and the monsters are still there, that's when you want your family. Welcome to the safest place in the paranormal world, TAPS Family Radio. They're the family you always wish you had. Your hosts tonight are Tim Ellis of the Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society of Michigan and Chris Perkins of the Atlantic Paranormal Society, interviewing the biggest names and tackling the subjects you want to hear about only on Jackalope Radio. They're not your average family, but I guess that's what makes them fun. Here is Chris and Tim.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another evening of TAPS Family Radio. Here we are. It's another Tuesday evening with myself, Tim Ellis, and co-host Chris Perkins, who is back with us. Chris, you weren't able to be with us 2 weeks ago, so it's been a while since you've been here.
It has been. I've missed you guys. I heard everything was phenomenal, as usual. Nice job.
Yeah, everything seemed to run smooth without, you making sure we stayed in line, but I think we behaved ourselves pretty well, so.
Well, you know, I hated missing that one. That was the one with Marie Jones, and she's just my favorite. So I hated missing that, but, stuff happens.
It does happen. It's called life, and sometimes it just gets in the way of those things we want to do.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, I felt bad for you because I knew you really wanted to be part of that show with Marie and Larry, which was our show 2 weeks ago, and it was a fantastic show, and boy, those were two people we could have talked to for another 2 hours, absolutely. So if anyone did miss it, you can go back and listen on our archives, which is on our website, of course, if you want to join us there right now. If you're not already with us, all you have to do is go to tapsfamilyradio.net, tapsfamilyradio.net. Join us on there, and if you click on chat, you'll find us in the chat room right now, and we encourage you to join us in our chat room during our shows because it's a great way for you to ask questions for either our TAPS family guests that we have on or our guests in the second hour that we have on as well. Great way for you to go ahead and ask questions that way. So go to tapsfamilyradio.net, and also right on the homepage there too, you will find all of the archived shows. And this wonderful website, this new website we've got, is so cool, and it wouldn't be what it is without our fantastic producer Cormac. He always does such a great job for us.
He's awesome. And you know, we have another guy that's kind of behind the curtain, our booking and promotions guy, Larry.
That's right. As a matter of fact, we were able to bring Larry out from behind the curtain 2 weeks ago, because that's actually who co-hosted with me when you couldn't be with me.
Yeah, isn't he awesome? And you know what he's done? He's brought Marie to his show tonight so that I don't have to totally miss my interview with Marie.
Oh, really? I did not know that. Oh, very cool. Well, that's awesome.
So I get to be on that show next after this one, and I get to talk to Marie after all, so it's working out.
Nice. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Also, too, we want to remind everyone, too, our new home of TAPS Family Radio. We are now on Jackalope Radio, and we're so excited to be part of the folks at Jackalope, and we're having a great time there. So make sure you tune in to Jackalope Radio. You can find our show there, or, again, you can just find a link right to our show at Jackalope from TAPS Family Radio. .net. We've got a great show lined up for you. We're going to be heading to Roswell this evening, but not the Roswell you're thinking of. I just learned something today. I found out there's a Roswell, Georgia, which I was not aware of.
Yes, there is.
So we're going to be heading there and talking to our TAPS family team a little bit later this evening, in just a little bit. And then we are going to talk upright canines tonight, Chris.
Yeah, exciting stuff. I mean, you know, we think of it kind of on the fringe a little bit, but let me tell you, this lady is interesting. People need to stick around and listen to this, because upright canines, you know, give it a chance. Just hear us out.
Mm-hmm. Now, don't think quite the Hollywood werewolf that we're used to seeing that changes and goes through that big metamorphosis stage, but you're right. Our guest later this evening, Linda Godfrey, is an expert in the field of the dog man. And once people get a chance to listen to her, she's got great books out there on the subject matter, and I know you're going to want to pick them up after we talk to Linda in the second hour, so that's what we've got going on. But before we get to all that on TAPS Family Radio this evening, what do you say we have some fun with some strange news, shall
we? Sounds like a good idea.
All right, let's see. Where do we want to start here? Let's start with this one. I found this one really interesting. JFK, of course. There's so many controversies out there about the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. You know, one shooter, two shooters. Was it the Soviets? Was it internal? Was it his own people? There's so many conspiracy theories out there. And let's go ahead and throw one more onto that pile now, because an uncovered letter written by John F. Kennedy to the head of the CIA shows that the president demanded to be shown highly confidential documents about UFOs just 10 days before his assassination. Now, the secret memo is one of two letters written by JFK asking for information about the paranormal on November 12, 1963, which have been released by the CIA for the first time. And here's who got their hands on them. Its author, William Lester, said the CIA released the documents to him under the Freedom of Information Act after he made the request while researching his new book called A Celebration of Freedom, JFK and the New Frontier. The president's interest in UFOs shortly before his death is likely, like I said, to fuel another conspiracy theory of maybe one reason why his life was cut short. I don't know if I would go that far, but I always find it interesting when the leader of the free world, whoever the president happens to be, when they take that much interest in UFOs and the paranormal, I always find that very interesting.
Oh, I do too. I mean, we tend to extend a little bit of extra credibility to those people because we know that they have more inside information about just about everything. Mm-hmm. So to know that he had access to more information than the general public and still had that level of interest and even went so far as to make that demand, that's pretty interesting.
Exactly.
You know, it also puts a whole new angle on it. Is anybody really in danger then that pushes for that information? Or, you know, it's saying this conspiracy is true. Let's just go there a second.
Yeah.
Is anybody in danger then? If we get a little bit close to those answers, if we uncover a little bit too much, are we all at risk?
You know, that's a good question. And I don't know if it's so much on the, you know, what we deal with mostly is ghosts and hauntings. But, you know, there's something to be said about UFOs and alien life form and species from another planet who can easily enter our airspace. And you know, do we have the defense technology to defend ourselves? That's why I think the government is so secretive about UFOs and possible other life forms. And I think that's where if you start to get too close, you might start to see, you know, the black helicopters and the quote-unquote men in black snooping around your neighborhood. So,
right.
Yeah. Again, it's just it's right on the fringe of being out there, but yet there's something that's always keeping it right in the mainstream of like, wow, that's pretty interesting.
Well, you know, to kind of go along, I have a story that goes with yours a little bit, not quite to the conspiracy theory and everything, but the alien theme. You know, we focus a lot on the claims of alien sightings in the United States and everything, but now there's one in Russia. Have you heard this?
I actually just saw the headlines today, and I'm glad you're doing this story because I did not have a chance to read up on this, so I'd love to hear more about it.
Well, what happened, it was about a month ago that hundreds of people in Siberia saw an unidentified flying object hurl to the ground and crash. They heard it. They saw it. It was clearly seen. You know, people obviously were not taking an airplane or weather balloon or anything. They saw it. They heard it crash. And then they began investigating. They said an enormous team of government officials, military personnel, Secret Service, all kinds of people went to this crash site within hours and started picking it apart. Well, now what has surfaced is a video of that was shot by two teenagers who stumbled across, I think one of the theories was that maybe their dog uncovered this, an alien body preserved in the snow in Siberia. Now, I've seen the video. I just looked at it again. And, you know, I'm a little skeptical about it, but you never know. I don't know what an alien's going to look like. But I did find it interesting that a video surfaced, you know, that had such a clear shot. For those who want to look at it, you can find it on unexplainable.net. You know, you'll just kind of have to search it from there. There's some long, of course, web address to it. It is an interesting video. It shows an alien packed in snow, one leg missing. I would kind of like to hear from some MUFON people and see what they think about this. You know, they have a little bit more information on what the more common claims of what these grays look like. So I wanted, you know, to put that out there. Anybody that looks at it, let us know what you think. Does this look like what the common description of these grays looks like? Or, you know, let's pick it apart a little bit and see what our people think about it.
So you say there's an actual picture or an actual video. What's your thought on it?
Okay, I don't know. It just looks a little too much like clay for me, but I'm willing to throw it out there that, you know, maybe the video is not top quality. I don't know. I want to see one up running around a little bit before I make that determination. I think the fact that so many people saw a crash did present a good opportunity for those who wanted to put together a hoax to do so.
And why is it always that, and I say this grudgingly, because if I ever am lucky enough to quote unquote get the money shot in the paranormal field of a ghost, you know, it's probably going to be grainy too, and everyone's going to think I faked it. But why is it every time we see, you know, the running Bigfoot across the front of the car or this or that, why are they always blurry and grainy? Why can't we just get a good high definition? There's so many high def camcorders out there these days. Why can't we just get a good, crisp, clear picture? That's what bothers me.
Well, you know, this is a pretty clear picture, but it's shot down, they're higher up, and it's like in a hole in the snow. And they do zoom in, and you lose a little bit of clarity there. And they're speaking in Russian, so I have no idea what they're saying.
Right.
You know, it is pretty interesting. They do pan up and down, but at the same time, you know, you get the right people together, the people that do costuming and things like that, you can really make something look impressive. So, I don't know. Maybe I just need to go over there and see it myself. I'm one of those need-to-see-it-myself people. Let's go, Tim. Let's go look.
To Russia, though?
Yeah, it's a bit far.
More like Jamaica, where it's hot and warm and beautiful resorts.
Yeah, I agree. Fair idea.
If they find a Russian in Jamaica, we're there. Or not a Russian, but
an alien. Or a Russian. We don't really need a good reason. Yeah. We'll go.
All right, let's go one more here. And just because this kind of ties into a story that we shared a couple shows ago. We were talking about how they're starting to create a mind-controlled car. And they've actually experimented with this, where you actually just think of the way you want to turn and the car responds to it. Now, granted, they've been experimenting, and it's in the experimental phase, but that's one's down the road quite a ways. Here's something, again, using the mind, and this is really getting into the sci-fi kind of thing, to dial your phone, scrolling through your address book and pressing the call button. I mean, this could become obsolete now because a new brain interface is being explored by researchers in San Diego, California, which could enable you to make calls just by thinking of the number. And participants who have used it so far have found it to be almost 100% accurate, though they say some people achieve higher accuracy than others. Like, maybe that has something to do with your IQ. I don't know. Basically, what they do is they put one of those electrode helmets on your head, hooked up to a Bluetooth, which then somehow transmits that to the phone, which actually dials the number you're thinking of.
Whoa. You know, are we really getting this lazy?
That's a good point.
I mean, it's impressive. Just imagine where they could go from there, but we can't dial our phones.
Well, isn't that kind of where it seems modern technology is taking us, though, to the brink of being the laziest people in the history of mankind?
You know, there's a children's movie, and I'm drawing a complete blank on what it is, that goes there and talks about what happens when we become too dependent on technology. And everybody's in wheelchairs, or not chairs, but these floating, hovering chairs, and they're all overweight. Nobody has muscle control. I can't think what movie it is, but
was that Disney one where the little dude had to clean up the garbage, right?
Right.
Yeah, what was that one?
I can't think, but, you know, are we headed there? We can't dial our phones, but, you know, I'm a little concerned, too, on how it picks that up from our brain. I don't want anybody going in there. I've got stuff that's mine. You know, I don't want anybody necessarily digging in there.
That's true. And, you know, what if just thinking a 900 number and that dialed, you know, that's going to get expensive, too. So I'm just saying, I'm just throwing that out there.
We never do that. You're talking about other people.
Right. I'm just thinking out loud here for other people's sake. All right. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be checking in with one of our fantastic TAPS family teams out there working hard. And we're going to be going to Roswell, not New Mexico, but Roswell, Georgia. We're going to be talking to Dan Bernstein. And he is with Roswell Paranormal. That'll be coming up next. This is TAPS Family Radio live on Jackalope Radio.
Tired of wondering where to get the best ghost hunting gear at the best price? wondering if you're being ripped off or if the product is high quality and can last the rugged life of a ghost hunter. Your fear and search is over. Creepy Hollow Gear is the home of ghost hunting gear made by ghost hunters for ghost hunters. Founded by Paul Bradford of Sci-Fi Channel's Ghost Hunters International, Paul wanted to create a place where all the equipment was proven and tested in the field. Some even built by Paul and his team, making Creepy Hollow Gear the only place you can get some of this equipment. Check them out for yourself at www.creepyhollowgear.com, where you'll find a place that is set up for teams and enthusiasts who aren't inclined to build their own equipment or kit. A site that has the top gear at prices a team on a budget can afford. A place where people can try new equipment and technology. That's www.creepyhollowgear.com. Ghost hunting gear made by ghost hunters for ghost hunters.
If you are in need of a professional, experienced, and confidential paranormal investigation at a home or commercial location, the International Paranormal Reporting Group is ready to talk with you. For more information about us and other services we offer, or to interact with team members and people just like you, visit us online at IPRGC.com. That's IPRGC.com. The International Paranormal Reporting Group is a proud TAPS family member.
And welcome back to Taps Family Radio on this Tuesday evening. It is Tim Ellis, Chris Perkins with you. Thanks for joining us for another great edition of TFR here live on Jackalope Radio. And don't forget, you can join us on our website, brand new and looking great. It is TapsFamilyRadio.net. That's TapsFamilyRadio.net. And on there, on the homepage, of course, you can find all of our archived shows from the past. And you can also join us in our chat room and also read about the show and who we are and why we're silly enough to do this all the time, because we love it. That's why. So right now it is our Taps Family segment, where each show we try to highlight one of the great Taps Family teams out there that are working so hard and representing the Taps Family so well. So Chris, at this time I'm going to turn it over to you as the manager of Taps Family. Why don't you go ahead and take it from here?
All right. Thank you very much. This evening we have Dan Bernstein. He's with us representing Roswell Paranormal. And as Tim said, it's not the Roswell you're thinking. It's Roswell, Georgia. Dan, are you with us?
I am here. How is everyone doing?
Doing great. Hey, thanks for joining us. We've tried to have you on so many times, and it just fell through. I'm excited to finally have you here tonight.
Hey, there was a curse possibly.
It wouldn't be the first time.
No one was injured while breaking this curse.
It wouldn't be the first time we thought that about this show or had trouble getting a guest on, but today I was just so glad to hear that it was still going to work out and we could have you on today. So no pressure, but because we've tried so hard, we're expecting a fantastic interview. No pressure.
Well, you know, now is when the phone disconnects, but no, it's great.
Well, Dan, I'm always really excited to have our Taps Family teams on the show. It gives us a chance to really spotlight the quality that we have in the Taps Family Network, and Roswell is definitely one of those teams. I know that Diana, they've all been involved with, Joe and Diana both, have been involved with the Taps Family for years. Diana is one of our Taps Family management members, and so Roswell Paranormal is just really, really a part of Taps Family, really in there really well. Can you tell us a little bit about how long your team has been together, a little bit about your team, the makeup of your team, and things like that?
Sure. Well, the team was formed in 2007, and we've been Taps Family since 2008, and it's interesting, and it's been an interesting journey, I think, for the whole team. For me specifically, you know, like a lot of people will get involved in investigating the paranormal, at first it's more of a this is kind of neat, there's got to be something to this, and I've had a personal experience like many people in this field have had, and you want to take it to that next level. Well, in the middle of while this is happening, you start talking to real people who are having real problems, and I'm talking people who are afraid to even go and just spend the night in their own home. And that's just, you know, a horrible situation. And so it's teams like ours that actually make it our mission to, you know, we're sort of past the point of, okay, the paranormal is cool. It is, but there's this whole other side to it. And so our GPI is really here to help people that need help and feel like they don't have a place, or, you know, I mean, it's so, and I'll kind of rewind a bit, you know, the popularity of paranormal television shows has really been a good thing for this field, because now at least people can talk about the paranormal. Well, they might not have felt comfortable. Like if they're at work, you know, it's a lot easier now for them to say, hey, did you catch Ghost Hunters last night? Oh, you know, I did too. Have you ever had anything happen in your home? So it's a lot more open, but, you know, outside of that, it's still something that people, you know, tend to feel uncomfortable about, specifically if things are happening that, you know, make them feel personally uncomfortable. And so, you know, we're here primarily, what our GPI does is in-home investigations, private and home, and we love what we do. We love helping people, and we've been doing it ever since the team formed.
You know, you hit on something there that I think a lot of people maybe don't realize when they first get into the field, and that is that a lot of us do get into this just because we're interested, but there's definitely a point where you've gone, it's kind of like that point of no return. where you get far enough into this that you realize you can help people. And then it almost becomes a responsibility, in my opinion, because with that explosion of those TV shows, and let's face it, you know, there are some good ones. And then there are some shows that seem to be almost designed to create hysteria. And with that, you get people who are terrified to go to their own home or to go to their place of business. And it is almost a responsibility, I feel like, at that point, to go in and be able to help those people feel comfortable, which is really how it turns out. Would you agree most of the time that you can go in and make them feel comfortable?
Oh, no question about that. And you hit the nail on the head. I mean, you know, with the popularity of the TV shows, it's, you know, all the good that I mentioned earlier. Well, there's also a bad side to it, and, you know, we won't mention specific shows. But, you know, I can't tell you how many times we get calls from clients saying that they think that there's a demon in their home. And the word demon gets tossed around so much, and, you know, a lot of times when you just take even just the initial phone call of talking to people and finding out what's going on, you know, a lot of it, you know, you can really calm fears, because not all of this is demonic. I would say very little of it is, you know, in my opinion, it's a very, very rare thing. I think it probably does happen, but we not really run into that. And so I think that just having, you know, a group of people or someone that can come out to your home and actually say, okay, you know, here are the things that have been going on, and this is what we found out. We're not going to give you our best, you know, we're not going to present, well, you know, we didn't capture anything, but our feelings are this or that. I mean, we're getting just hardcore, this is what we've got, and this is what we're getting from that evidence. And that alone really, you know, makes people, I think it takes a bit of the mystery out of it, and they tend to be more comfortable. And that's huge, because you're right, there are a lot of people that are terrified, and some of that, I think, is pushed with all this talk of negativity and demonic on some of the TV shows.
I agree. I think, you know, what it boils down to for me, because people ask me all the time, and I'm sure you get this too, all of us do, you know, aren't you afraid to do what you do? And for me, it boils down to the simple fact that we're dealing, theoretically, because remember, none of this is proven, but we're dealing in theory with humans that don't have a body. And that's as simple as it is for me. So for it to be frightening, you know, all of that comes in the way that Hollywood and all of the, you know, movies and even books dramatize it and, you know, really play it up. One of the things I appreciate about your team's website and what we try to aim for in Taps Family is a good, clean website that doesn't have the flashing skulls and the, you know, the really spooky, scary stuff, because we so want to not promote that. We want people to know that this really isn't as fearful as Hollywood would like everybody to believe. Of course, you know, that doesn't sell movies, but...
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, we like to keep it simple on the website, and it is as simple as it gets, but intentionally so. And when you go to a site and you hear the spooky music and a skull flashes up on the screen, I mean, it's completely, you know, the wrong image of what this paranormal field is really all about, what actual, you know, experiences that people are having. And, you know, you see that, and it's kind of like, you know, in the medical field, you know, people will Google things and scare themselves to death. Like, you know, they're going to look up symptoms of a cold and they're reading about cancer and other things and this and that. And, you know, the paranormal is kind of the same way. You know, people are looking to the internet more and more and doing research. And unfortunately, I think some of these sites pop up and it pushes them to feel fear.
I agree 100%. I think I stepped on Tim, too. I'm sorry, Tim.
No, that's fine. I just wanted to kind of reiterate what, you know, what you guys were talking about and you know, to the whole point of certain shows out there that make it seem like every haunting is demonic. And, Dan, you hit it on the head, you know, so the percentage of hauntings, first of all, the percentage of hauntings that are actual hauntings are small. And then within that, the percentage that are actual beyond just a human, someone who was once a human being. You know, the percentage is so minute, but these shows make it seem like every haunting is a haunting. But what really gets my goat and makes me mad is there is no ratings on these TV shows, and I can't tell you how many times we are getting emails from families that have little kids that are so frightened because they're watching these shows, and so mom and dad think that their kids are just watching a show about ghosts, but they don't realize that these little kids are being told that there's demons in every home, and they're getting frightened by this, and that's what really makes me mad, is that these little kids are being exposed to this.
Oh, you know, I didn't even think about that. They don't have the rates, do they?
No, there's no PG-13. There's no ratings on these shows. So these little kids are expecting maybe, you know, like their chiller type things that are on Nickelodeon, and they're sitting down, and here's these families that are screaming bloody murder that there's a devil in their house. And it's just, it really gets to me.
Yeah, wow, I didn't even think about that. You know, in some of those channels, too, and I'm not trying to pick on any particular show, but, you know, Animal Planet, that's one that kids will go to watch TV.
Perfect example. And and now Animal Planet has jumped on the bandwagon and even have a ghost show out there. And they always try to, they have to, because it's an animal show, but they try to tie in an animal to it somehow, which is pretty out there sometimes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, I noticed on your website... Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say the thought of the haunted cheetah or haunted lion intrigues me. I'm going to have to check out Paranormal Show.
You never know. I noticed on your website something that I thought was pretty interesting, and I knew a little bit about it just from talking, you know, through Pap's family and things, but you have a section about the Titanic exhibit. Where your team was invited out to participate with an event that went on at the Georgia Aquarium. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened there?
Yeah, in fact, that's it kind of ties in nice, because that is where I met Joe and Diana for the first time. Before I was a member of RGPI, they went out and got the incredible opportunity to investigate the Titanic exhibit at the Georgia Aquarium. And what was interesting about that particular case, besides the fact that just the enormous size of this aquarium, I think it's considered one of the world's largest, or at least in the United States, but it wasn't so much the aquarium that had reported issues. It was that they started to report things after the Titanic exhibit was moved in the facility. And so, you know, it sort of had this reputation of going from city to city. As this exhibit went from place to place, that things would start to happen. People felt like they were being touched. People felt like they were having this overwhelming feeling of being watched. And so, you know, these things were happening. And RGPI was lucky enough to actually go in and have this investigation. And one of the investigations actually produced enough to where the actual, taps for ghost hunters were called in, and Joe and Diane were actually part of that episode, and it was just such an interesting experience, because, you know, these things are happening not so much tied to, like, so many people here, well, is it the property, is it me, is it my family, well, you know, this was actually items, and things were following seemingly these items from place to place, as if people felt like, or these entities or spirits or, you know, whatever, you know, you want to call them, you know, seem to have an attachment to perhaps their items. I know that's going on, and we can't prove that per se, but certainly there was activity, and it was indeed seemingly tied to the exhibit. What's interesting about that is, since the Titanic exhibit has since left the Georgia Aquarium, activity stopped. They don't have anything going on there right now.
That is interesting. You know, and you have to wonder, as far as attachments, you know, people say, well, why would he stick to his old car? Or why would he, you know, why would she want to hang around her old desk, you know? But in this case, an attachment would make sense to me, because if I were a spirit and I wanted, you know, to be recognized or known, or for somebody to notice me, and I had been involved in the sinking of the Titanic, I would think, hey, you know, I'm going to go back and, you know, hang around the stuff that was there, because somebody will eventually notice me. So in this this situation, I think an attachment makes perfect sense. You know, in theory, again, you know.
Well, it's interesting when you actually see some of the items that they had in the grid. I mean, some of it was heart-wrenching. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of us know the Titanic, and I'll throw my hand up here as well for the Hollywood version of the story. And, of course, we all grow up hearing about what happened, and, you know, we see the film on TV. But when you actually see, like, a child's pair of shoes and, you know, a gentleman's shirt that looks like it had just been pressed, I mean, some of this, it's amazing how this devastation occurred and a massive amount of people lost their lives. But yet some of these artifacts, I mean, it's as if something was washed over them. They weren't touched at all. And it's very heart-wrenching to see some of those things firsthand. And then you know, sort of take a step back and say, well, could there be someone that's wanting to be seen or heard? Or is it an emotional attachment because of the loss they felt at the time that this thing happened? And this is all that's left, and they're clinging to it. So, hard to say, but very interesting.
You know, I can identify a little bit with what you're saying because, and by the way, this is an aside, today is the 16th anniversary of the bombing in Oklahoma City. So we had all those, you know, ceremonies this morning. But going through that museum and seeing, like you said, they have displays of, like, people's car keys that were found or shoes or, you know, just day-to-day items, and it just gives it more of a sense of reality. To go through it, anybody that comes to Oklahoma City really needs to take the time to go through that because it makes it real. It needs to be real for people. They need to know what happened and to remember why. But to go in and see those items just makes it very, very real. Now, we've had people suggest that we try to investigate down there, and I never will. There's a team in Oklahoma City that sneaks in and records EVPs and stuff in the actual bombing area down there, and I just don't condone it. But I think, you know, what you're talking about, that's amazing because you're talking about them bringing those artifacts in and it changing the activity in the building, and then when they leave, the activity goes away. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think with the Oklahoma City bombing, I mean, even though it happened a little while ago, it's too soon for that. And I definitely hear where you're coming from. You know, the Titanic, I think the last surviving member recently passed away. And so it's a little bit different situation, plus the fact that, you know, it was brought out on tour specifically by these different areas, and the aquariums are showing the artifacts. So a little bit different situation. And maybe 100 years from now, you know, the same can be done in a respectful way with the Oklahoma City bombing. But maybe now's not the time for that.
Right. I agree with you there. Definitely. But, you know, it like the humanization of it, I think, is the key there. And I would really like to see, is that still an exhibit that travels, this Titanic exhibit? Is it still out?
You know, I don't know. I'll have to look that up. I'm just not sure. I know it's not no longer at the Georgia Aquarium, but I don't know if it's out or not.
I would love to see it. I missed it. If it came through here, I totally missed it. Now, kind of switching gears here a little bit, you have an interesting thing coming up with your group that you're doing. Aside from this, it sounds like you're a group that does, you know, gets involved in things outside just investigating residentials, and I think that's exciting. Tell us a little bit about what you have coming up. I believe you said it's the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital. Can you tell us a little bit about what you'll be doing there?
Yeah, that's right. So most of the time, you know, we do the private in-home investigations, and it is kind of a rare thing for us to get out and do something that's really just kind of for us and what we would consider a fun paranormal event. And, you know, this is definitely it. There's an old hospital no longer in use called the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital, and it is in South Pittsburgh, Tennessee. And the neat thing about it is the hospital has had a lot of documented activity, and, you know, many paranormal teams have been there in the past, and some very interesting things have come out of it. So we have the night booked for us, just our team, and our GPI will be out there on May 7th. But we're going to try something different. We've had a lot of people. You know, it's interesting. We have a Facebook page and our website, and a lot of people like to ask us questions about what we find and you know, information and specific details about our investigations, and we just can't tell anybody anything for the most part because most of what we do is private. But this is one. It's going to be an event that we're going to say, hey, you know what? We want to show you what we're going to do here. And so the neat thing about Old South Pittsburgh is they have their own IR cameras, and I think they've got 10 IR cams that are all set up into Ustream. And so we're taking the Ustream link, and we've embedded it into our own website, and we're going to host a chat. And so people that have seen the Ghost Hunters Live episodes, it's kind of what we're doing. So we're going to be at this hospital, and we'll have on our own page the feed from Old South Pittsburgh. We'll have a feed from one of our own cameras, and then we'll have a chat room. And if someone sees something that's happening, they'll alert us, and we'll go running. But trust me, we'll go towards that area and try and see what's going on. And so this is kind of anything for us. We've not done anything like this in the past, and it's exciting for me to be able to open up a little bit of what we do and give people, you know, kind of a taste, even though in this case it's virtually at home on their computer.
You know, I think that's exciting. I think for several reasons, my team used to do this, and we're looking for a broadcast technician right now to come back in and start it up for us. One of the things I value about that is it gives people a good example, people that want to watch this, and I encourage people to tune in and watch when you guys do this because they'll be seeing quality investigations. There are streaming investigations all over the internet, and unfortunately, not all of them are, oh, Tim, you're good with words. What am I trying to say here?
Up to par?
Well, okay, yeah, no, they're not all up to par, or they're not maybe the model we would like to present to the public for how quality teams investigate. So it's exciting to hear that your team is going to be giving that type of model. If they want to watch, how are people going to hook up to watch this? Do they need any special programs or anything like that?
No, they don't. They can go to our website. It's www.roswellparanormal.com. And the link into this event is roswellparanormal.com/OS. Okay, OSPH, so like Old South Pittsburgh Hospital. So roswellparanormal.com/OSPH, and that'll take you right there to the live event page. And we'll also be promoting it on Facebook, and our Facebook link is facebook.com/RG, like Roswell, Georgia, Paranormal.
And definitely people should check that out. Now, that's May 7th. Is there a start time they need to be looking for? Do we know that yet?
We're going to be there from afternoon on and all through the night, so we'll probably fire up the live stream, I would guess, around 7 o'clock. But as we get closer to the event, we'll post that online as well. And I think you hit a great point about, you know, having the team, you know, filmed while we're doing this because, you know, we take investigating very seriously, and we're taking, you know, everything we do for an in-home, we're gonna move right into this investigation. You know, we do things maybe even a little bit different than some in the fact that it makes us sick about the fact that there are some times where, you know, a client or a homeowner is presented a piece of evidence that perhaps was someone brushing their sleeve up against a mic and it makes noise and kind of sounds like a voice. You know, we hold very, very locked down EVP sessions when we do EVP sessions. You know, we'll separate male and female teams. We have recorder stuff stopped at the same time. And so there's a whole method to it. And hopefully, you know, people will be able to see a little bit of that online as we investigate the North South Pittsburgh Hospital.
If you're just joining us right now, Dan Bernstein is our guest on TAPS Family Radio, and he is part of the TAPS Family segment with Roswell Paranormal out of Roswell, Georgia. Chris, I'm going to let you add another question.
Oh, no, I was just going to say I highly encourage, like I said, I can't tell people enough how they're going to be getting a good example here because there are just those shows sprinkled all over. Everybody's got to stream their investigations, but this is definitely a quality team. So by all means, May 7th.
And I think this is a great chance, too, because, and Dan, I'm sure you run into this all the time, and Chris, as I'm sure you do, too. You know, once people realize what it is we do, they're always asking, you know, what's it like out there? And I, you know, a lot of people will say, I really look up to what you guys do, or I think it's so cool what you guys do, because I just don't have, you know, I don't think I could do that. I don't think I could go looking for the ghosts or the spirits. So I really think this is going to allow the people who are so interested in what you guys do, Dan, but maybe just they don't have it in them to go out there and do it, but yet you're going to give them the opportunity to experience it. So I think it's cool on that end, too.
And, you know, not only
right,
that...
It takes a lot of mystery.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that it takes a bit of the mystery out of it. You know, again, we keep kind of referring back to the television shows, but that's what people know as paranormal investigations. And a real in-home investigation isn't really like that. There's no editing. And I always tell people when they say, oh, that's so cool that you investigate, I'm like, well, it's kind of boring. You know, there's no, you know, it's a very, very, you know, thought-out process. You're planning room to room. And so I think that this is good when there are live feeds. And the same thing with Ghost Hunters Live, that when they do their live specials, is the fact that people are seeing a different side of it. It's not edited. It's not, mm-hmm. you know, it is what it is. And it's laid out there. And for people to see it like that, I think is really special.
Yeah, and again, yeah, so many people, like you said, Dan, think that that what we do is what they see on TV, and it couldn't actually be further from the truth. The process that you guys use is the same, but when you are there for however many hours through the overnight, there is a lot of time where you're sitting there just scratching your head, you know, just kind of twiddling your thumbs, saying, "All right, let's get something to happen here." I like to compare it to, for those who do any type of hunting or know people who hunt, I consider ghost hunting, and I hate to use that term, but I'm just using it for now, like deer hunting. If you go out and you bait, you set up an area for your deer to come, and you just sit there and wait. Kind of the same thing when you're doing a paranormal investigation.
I would agree.
Oh yeah,
with
no
that.
Question. I mean, that's exactly it. There's a lot of waiting, and that's a good thing. You know, you don't want to go in and rush it. But I think that people, you know, don't realize that one night of investigating, you may have 40 plus hours of audio and video with all of the team members put together, and so, you know, phase one of that is actually trying to capture the evidence, and phase two is going through it, and that can take some time as well. And I'd love to, you know, give people, if we could figure out a way to give people a bit of a taste of that as well. So that's all interesting for people to tune in and check out.
You know, I can offer you a suggestion on that, because we actually did this. We had a recorder that we would take when we used to broadcast our investigations, and that one recorder was just for us to, we had a field member program at the time, that we would just allow our field members to review. And that audio was uploaded. They could download it, and they reviewed that audio for us. Now, this wasn't in a client's home or anything like that, but it gave them the opportunity to have raw audio that they could go through and listen to. Now, anything they got, we obviously went back over again, but they loved it. It gave people the chance to try it out. Maybe you could consider something like that.
Oh yeah, that sounds great. And you know, but definitely not with the private in home. But something like this, yeah, maybe we'll throw a live, you know, hey, here's a 20-minute clip. You know, y'all look through it and let us know what you find out. And I think that would be a great idea.
I think it again gives us a chance to educate people a little bit. You know, they have a new appreciation for how close you have to listen to your audio, how long it takes to go over and over and over, how critical you have to be of your evidence. And then gives them that little taste of actually getting to do it. They feel like they're a part of it, and takes kind of that mystery away that makes it scary. You know, mm-hmm. they've participated by that point.
I love it, man. That's a great idea. Kudos to both you guys. It's something my team have talked about, but we've never gone there. So I think that's great that both you guys have done that. So great job, Dan. Again, just to remind our listeners, or if anyone's just tuning in, the date of this event and how they can be a part of it.
Yeah, the date of the event is May 7th, and again, we'll be broadcasting maybe around 7 p.m., but the website for them to go to is really where we're getting a lot of updates through our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/RGParanormal. And our own link to the actual event is roswellparanormal.com/OSPH for Old South Pittsburgh Hospital.
Dan, if you don't mind me getting a little kind of changing direction here real quick and getting a little personal. Some people don't always like to share this, and if you don't want, you don't have to, but I'm always interested in what got people interested in the paranormal, and especially those who have taken it to this level of commitment that it takes to have a good, solid, paranormal investigative team and the money and the time it takes. Have you ever had a personal experience with a haunting or with a ghost that made you, go where you are today?
Yeah, it's funny because most people that I talk to that are actually in this field have had something that triggered it, more than just, an obsession. I watched Ghost Hunters or one of the other shows. Something happened to really push him down and want to stay with it. And exactly right. So I had an experience, and I'll be more than happy to talk about it here. It was roughly 2001-ish, some horrible dates, but roughly that time frame. I always had an interest in just odd things and paranormal. I was a big fan of Art Bell and Coast to Coast AM, and, love that stuff. And a friend of mine said, we hear that there are these ghost lights in a place in Virginia at the time where my parents at that time lived. There was a bunch of ghost lights that occurred in this place in Virginia, in Cohoke, Virginia. I mean, people can Google that and see info on it. Property, I definitely do not recommend that anybody trespass, but, we were young at the time, and so we decided to take the car out, and we wanted to take a look and see what we could find. So we were in this part of town. There weren't a lot of people there. It was a lot of trees and just real woodsy. And we go down to where the set of railway tracks are. That's fine. There's always railway tracks on so many of these paranormal stories. But there was a set of railroad tracks, and we parked the car, and we just got out, and we had, at the time, I think it was one of those old video cameras with the, the tape in there. And so I had this little video camera with me, and I pushed record and realized at that very moment that it was so dark, and there was no night vision or anything like that. And so I made a comment, oh, it's dark, can't see anything, I'm going to turn it off. So I only had that thing going for about 15 minutes or so. Well, after that had occurred, we were just being quiet and observing and looking down this set of railroad tracks. We saw what I can best describe as kind of a greenish hovering, almost like an orb, but it hovered above the tracks. And there could have been a completely natural explanation for this. Maybe some type of smog gas, I don't know, but we saw what we saw. And then we saw almost like a red light form and kind of swirled. I mean, this all sounds crazy, but we all saw it. And, it was what it was, and that was the end of that experience. So fast forward to the next day, and keep in mind that, at that time, I don't think there were any TV shows or anything like that about paranormal. I may be wrong. But I didn't know what an EVP was. I didn't know any of that. And so I remembered that I had this recorder, and we all had this kind of personal experience of seeing these lights. And so I played back this tape to just see if anything showed up on the recording. Well, it was too dark. We didn't see anything, but I got the clearest EVP that whispered the word hi. And what an amazing thing when you're not expecting that. And so, I kept going, well, wait a minute, I'm holding this camera. Was it you talking to one of the friends? Was it you? And we're all listening to this and kind of getting chills hearing it. And so from that point forward, it kind of launched me into this, oh my gosh, this thing is real. There are things happening that cannot be easily explained. And that's really what pushed me into that direction before actually becoming involved with that. With the team. So that's how it started for me.
Cool. Very cool. I love, to me, this is the side of me prior to becoming an investigator, just the fascination into the whole realm of the paranormal. I love personal stories like that, so thanks for sharing.
I've got a question. I've got a question, too. I hate to step on you, but we need to kind of step back a few topics ago, back to the underwater thing if we can, because this came from the chat room and I thought it was a good question. And Dan, since you've been involved with the Titanic exhibit and that investigation, this is a good one to ask you. It says, can there still be a connection between items and spirits when the item is still under the water? What do you think? What do you think on that?
You know, I don't have any personal experience that anything I would tell you there would be just my best guess. But, you know, I think, and I may be wrong about this, but I seem to recall that somebody attempted it underwater. It might have been Destination Truth and Josh Gates and those guys. But I want to say that somebody has actually attempted to record, and this is all coming back to me as we're talking about it. They were at some site, and I'm sure the chat room can correct me, but I think they captured what sounded like the sound of a motor or something where there were vehicles or ships on the water. Again, I'm sure I'm butchering the story, but they did seem to have something that they considered an EVP underwater. And so, you know, I don't think that it really matters where. You know, I think that we're all kind of going out on a limb, assuming that whatever it is that we're capturing is in any way, you know, in a situation like we're in, with the floor and the wall, and, you know, we're just kind of making these assumptions. They have to hold their breath when they're on the water. You know, it may not be that way, and so I think it's certainly possible.
Well, and I wonder, too, I mean, if we're going to go a little scientific for a minute and say that a spirit would be energy, isn't water a conductor? I mean, wouldn't that, am I wrong? Am I way off on my science here? I mean, I'm a second grade teacher, not, you know, but isn't water a conductor? So maybe it would be easier for a spirit to be, you know, present down there. Who knows? I thought it was an interesting question.
It could be, and it's funny because it's one of those things to where, you know, it's, you know, I think we, as paranormal investigators, you know, we tend to, unfortunately, you have to go out on a limb on some things, because if it were easy to prove the existence of paranormal, you'd see it on the NBC Nightly News, and don't. And so, you know, with things like this, I think it's certainly possible. But, you know, when we hear things like this, or someone captures something underwater, again, it may not be a spirit in the sense of what we think a spirit is. It may be something completely different, and it's just unfamiliar to us. It could be a different form of life, and we just don't know quite what it is that we're dealing with.
I agree. I definitely agree. You know, there are so many unknowns to this that it's hard to answer a lot of these questions, because everything is still so up in the air with all of the variables and things that we don't know. We just flat don't know. So much of it is guesswork at this point.
Yeah, and that's why I think in this field there's really no wrong answers, you know. I mean, we're like you said earlier, Chris, the whole field is nothing but theories. So I don't think there's any wrong answer, and I don't think anyone should ever close off an answer if we ever want to try to get to the bottom of all this.
I agree.
Our job would be so much easier if during an investigation somebody were to say, hey, I'm the dead Uncle Ken. Hi. You know, we just don't get that. And so, you know, there's a whole lot that's still left to be uncovered. And part of the challenge is trying to figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Dan, thank you so much, man, for taking time to be with us tonight. We're talking to Dan Bernstein from Roswell Paranormal, Roswell, Georgia. Dan, real quick, the website address, if anyone wants to find you and your team.
Yeah, the website address is roswellparanormal.com, and our Facebook is facebook.com/RGParanormal.
Fantastic. Dan Bernstein, TFR family, thank you so much for being with us.
All right, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Dan.
There we go, Dan Bernstein from Roswell Paranormal in Roswell, Georgia. We all learned something today, that there's another place named Roswell. Here's what we're going to do now. We are going to take a quick break here with TFR live on Jackalope Radio. When we come back, we're going to switch from underwater ghosts to canines that walk upright. We're covering all ends of the spectrum here tonight on TFR. We're going to be talking with noted author Lynn Godfrey, who is an expert as much as you can be in the field of dogmen and what Hollywood has taken over and has created the werewolf from. We're going to be talking to Linda next here with TFR.
You told us you wanted more variety.
All types of music. I love the music. The music.
With less commercials, and we delivered.
Jackalope Radio.
The Taps family is truly international. If you live in the peninsula of Fife on the eastern border of Scotland and feel you may have a haunting, there's help. Scottish Paranormal, a proud Taps family member, is a scientific-based paranormal research team that is dedicated to the study of the unknown. Helping individuals, families, and business owners over the past 6 years, Scottish Paranormal is ready to help you. Their work is confidential and no charge for service will ever be asked of their clients. If you feel you need the help of Scottish Paranormal, then go to their website at www.scottish-paranormal.com. co.uk.
South Coast Paranormal Tours. Dare to explore the unknown.
South Coast Paranormal Tours invites you to explore the haunted decks of the Star of India. We'll show you the paranormal hotspots, then we turn off the lights and let you be a part of your very own paranormal investigation.
Visit us online at scparanormaltours.com.
South Coast Paranormal Tours. Dare to explore the unknown.
Welcome back to Taps Family Radio on our home here at Jackalope Radio. Thanks for being with us, Tim Ellis, Chris Perkins, on another TFR night here. And we're so excited to have our guest with us here tonight. There's kind of a buzz going on out there right now. It always seems, Chris, have you ever noticed this, that people are either a buzz about vampires, and of course sparkly vampires these days, or werewolves, you know. It's one or the other. And right now the buzz seems to be on werewolves, and that's because of the new movie out, of course. We've been talking about it, Red Riding Hood.
And unfortunately, have you had a chance to see it yet?
You know, I waited forever for that movie to come out, and the night it opened, we went to see it. not as impressed as I had hoped to be.
And go ahead, sorry.
Have you seen it?
I haven't, but I've talked to people who have, and sadly, that's the feeling I'm getting from people, and it's really getting ripped apart by the critics, too.
It looked so good. And, you know, we were even saying that, I think, on the way in. We hope they didn't show the best parts of the movie in the previews, because they do that so often, and they really kind of did. I mean, I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but, you know, I told my son, I said, just wait until it comes out on DVD.
Yeah, and you know, but is it possible that the werewolf that we see on the big screen is kind of actually in our real lives? And that's why we've got our guest here with us tonight. Linda Godfrey is an author and researcher of the strange and uncanny, and has been called Wisconsin's leading authority on the paranormal. Now, on her travels throughout Wisconsin and Michigan and beyond, she's traveled all through the U.S., Canada, and further than that. She's investigated anything mysterious or kind of quirky, even some giant roadside statues. And we're not going to really get into that. We're going to focus more on Linda's research on what started out with a simple book called The Beast of Bray Road, which happened in her home state of Wisconsin, and then from there kind of bled over into Michigan with the legends of the Michigan Dogmen, and from there it has taken her all across the globe researching the legend of werewolves. And we'd like to welcome to TFR right now Linda Godfrey. Linda, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it is an honor. I've had a chance to see some of your presentations and hear some of your interviews before on some other shows, so we're very excited to have you. Now, let's talk about, first of all, let's just take this chronologically. Take us back to the days of Beast of Bray Road and how the legend of a possible dog man has become such a big part of your life now.
Well, it just started in a very odd way. I had just begun as a newspaper reporter for a county newspaper in southeastern Wisconsin called The Week. And it was that dead kind of winter when there's really not much going on. So you're kind of fishing for stories. And somebody came to me and said that they had heard people around Elkhorn, Wisconsin, were reporting seeing what they called a werewolf. Yeah, on this little country road, only 2 miles long, just outside of town called Bray Road. And I laughed, you know, I thought that was kind of funny. But yet, I started asking around, and I realized that people actually were talking about it. I did a little bit more digging, and I discovered that our county's animal control officer actually had a manila file folder that he had labeled werewolf, because people were calling into him and saying, I saw this thing. I don't know what it was, but if there was such a thing as a werewolf, it looked like a wolf that walked upright. That's what it would be. And so he didn't know what it was or what to call it either. So when you have a county official with an official file folder marked werewolf, you've got a news story. It became news. And I was able to follow up on the people that had been calling him, and it interested me that they were calling him, because when you're setting up a hoax, you generally don't kick it off by calling the local authorities. You know, you're sort of trying to avoid the authorities and hope that just somebody else local will put it forward. And then I realized also that these people were quite varied in their makeup. There were men, women, old, young, blue collar, white collar, farmers. There wasn't any one type of person, and none of them seemed like they were hoaxers. They were all willing to talk to me, and they were all genuinely alarmed by what they had seen, and all of them had this overwhelming desire to find out what it was. And I also had the thought that even if it turned out to be just some kind of natural animal, a mistaken bear or something like that, that this was also newsworthy, because the populace had the right to know that there was some kind of dangerous animal lurking among them. So we ran the story, and I dubbed it The Beast of Bray Road, because I was even then a little bit leery of the word werewolf. I wasn't sure that's what it was, and beast just sounded good with Bray Road, so that was what I titled the story, and it just stuck. Now, my editor and I had this little conversation, and we were saying, well, no, people around here will have some fun with it, and then it'll go away, and it'll be forgotten in 2 weeks. Well, in 2 weeks, it had gone national. I was getting phone calls to be on radio shows from coast to coast across the whole country. Radio stations, Inside Edition came out. There were several other national TV shows at the time that were out within the year. And lo and behold, I started getting letters from other states and even other countries, the Virgin Islands, telling me that they also had seen this creature. And I realized that it was not just some strange local phenomenon happening only on Bray Road, but that this was something that crossed states, countries, cultures, and it made me extremely interested to find out what it was. So, and that was about 20 years ago. So I've been on its trail ever since.
And it's taken you beyond, way beyond Wisconsin now, even though that's where it started for you, with Beast of Bray Road. And what have you found now over the years since that first article that you wrote and then a book? What have you found since then? Do all the states and even beyond the U.S., do they all have something in common? Does this seem to be one type of animal we're dealing with?
Well, occasionally a sighting will vary or be weird or seem supernatural, but probably the huge majority of them mostly follow a pretty standard modus operandi, that it looks like a wolf or a German shepherd that walks upright with a muscular, more muscular shoulders and chest than you would expect. And it always, although it may make eye contact, it may act aggressive, it may chase cars or even people. People think they're going to be eaten, but it never does. In almost every case, it makes its case, it makes you know that it's there, and then it gets away at the earliest convenience, either dives into the brush or jumps off a bridge or, you know, whatever's handy to get out of sight. And many people have also seen it convert from walking on two legs to four and vice versa. So it seems to be able to pass itself off as a four-legged creature when it seems convenient or when it wants to. So that seems to be the general. Once in a while, I'll get something that sounds more like a black phantom dog or like something that is conjured or, you know, that just doesn't fit that profile. But you can probably hear my dog growling in the background. I don't know if that excited him or not. But this is what I've found in every state that I've looked at. Not every state has reports, but the great majority do. And one thing that I always try and do when I get a report is I go to the map, I go to the atlas, I notice location, I try to see if it's near another hot spot. I take note of the geographical items around it and also the human cultural items, such as, is there a graveyard? Are there Native American sites here? Are there, you know, what's around it? And oftentimes the very same types of sites come up again and again wherever these creatures appear. One thing that's common in every single case is that there's some sort of water source nearby. They seem to really be tuned into water sources, especially flowing streams and that kind of thing. But even if it's just a marsh, there's almost always water nearby. And that was one aspect that stood out very early on.
Well, Linda, now, once people start realizing how widespread these reports are and that they aren't really just localized, they're everywhere, it seems like the next thing they want to know is where did they come from or you know, why are they here? And I saw where you had two theories, basically, and I don't know if they're your theories or if they're just kind of in general, where, you know, one theory is that they're a timber wolf that has adapted maybe to use its limbs right. in an advantageous way, which made sense to me. Or the other one was more along the Native American line, where it's an earth spirit or a transdimensional visitor. Do you have a favorite of those two theories, or what do you think?
Well, I go back and forth, and every time I think I'm just about to decide on one or the other, a couple of new cases will come in that might tilt me back the other way. But, yeah, the first one that you mentioned, was my theory. I call it the indigenous dog man. And it does make some sense that a canine could adapt itself to walk upright more easily when it wants to. We all know from merengue dancing dog videos and videos of a little dog that was born without arms that dogs can run and walk very easily on their hind legs. That is not a supernatural ability. It's something that they can do, but they're just not normally motivated to do that. And it isn't comfortable. They're really not built to be bipeds like we are. Their skeletal structure isn't framed that way. But if there was a group of canines that at some point found it advantageous, say because they lived in the prairie and wanted to look over tall grasses to see if there were either other predators or deer or tasty things to eat coming their way, and it was advantageous to be on their hind legs to look over the grass, natural selection would probably favor the ones that could do that. They might have also found that walking on their hind legs freed them to carry prey in their arms rather than dragging it in their mouths, which would make it much easier for something else to take it away from them, and allowed them to, you know, run more quickly with it. And in fact, a large proportion of the sightings view just this. They'll see the creature holding some kind of either roadkill or maybe a part of a deer carcass or something like that in its arms, sometimes people's pet, unfortunately, and, you know, either eating it while holding it with his paws or running with it that way. And another aspect, you know, anthropologists have conjectured that humans became more intelligent once we began walking on our hind legs because it causes your brain to have to make new connections. It frees up, you know, certain functions that can then be developed in other ways. And that perhaps this would have applied to these animals too. And people continually tell me that they have the feeling that these things are more intelligent than any natural animal. They'll make eye contact and they'll say, well, you know, it did feel like I was looking into the eyes of a regular dog or a wolf or some other wild creature. I felt that it was evaluating me, sussing me out, challenging me to come closer because it could get me if it wanted to, that kind of thing. You know, and that really scares people almost more than anything else about these creatures.
If you're just joining us tonight on Taps Family Radio, our guest is Linda Godfrey, author of many different topics regarding the paranormal and the supernatural. However, tonight we're talking about and learning about her expertise on the werewolf, the dogman, or manwolf. Now, Linda, you were just kind of talking about a couple of theories out there. Is it possible, and have you ever looked into this theory, or have you had anyone mention this to you? Is there any chance maybe these are Bigfoots that are being mistaken for an upright dog?
Yeah, that's one that comes up fairly often, and I just can't buy it because so many witnesses have had such a clear look and have been able to see the tall pointed ears on top of the head, the long snouted muzzle, and mostly, most important of all, the canine legs. Bigfoot is always reported as a sort of primate that walks plantigrade or flat-footed like humans do. Even bears will walk with their whole foot on the ground. Whereas these things are always described as walking on, people will say, well, walk on little dog feet, although it was really walking easily. Or they'll say, it ran really well on its hind legs, but it looked like its legs were bent backwards. And that tells me that they're actually observing what they're seeing, because dogs actually walk on their toe pads, and their heel and ankle joint, what would correspond to our heel and ankle joint, is lifted up off the ground. And so we're expecting to see at that point a knee bending forward, but instead we see the heel and ankle joint bending backwards, and the knee is actually up sort of where their thigh is. So to us, when they stand that way, it looks like the leg is bent backwards, mm-hmm. instead of flexing forward like a human knee. So those things tell me that it's really an entirely different thing. And I kind of make the analogy that let's say that you went to Africa and you were looking to see a gorilla, but instead you saw a hyena. Would you then say, well, I know that there are gorillas here, so this must be a different kind of gorilla that happens to have pointed ears and a big muzzle full of teeth and walks on dog legs. If you understand what I'm saying, right. You have to give the witnesses some credit for observing these details, when actually Bigfoot is much better known. Many people have never heard that there is such a thing as an upright canine until they see one and start looking into it. And you'd think if they were going to be prone to the power of suggestion, that they would be reporting that they were seeing Bigfoot rather than these things. But instead, they're giving very specific descriptions. Occasionally, I will get a description of something that's obviously a Bigfoot, and then it's really easy to tell because they'll describe, you know, the capelet of hair falling straight to its shoulders. They won't see a muzzle. They'll instead describe a broad, flat nose. You know, usually it's much bigger than the Dogman, and of course the feet and legs are entirely different. And I do get a surprising number of Bigfoot sightings, but they're very different, and the people are adamant as to which one that they saw, you know. So
right.
If you're going to believe the witnesses at all, I think you have to give credence to what they're saying about the details.
The details, right, yeah. Now, as far as Bigfoot goes, people say that there's a smell that can accompany a Bigfoot that kind of gives it away. That's what they're dealing with. Have you ever had reports of a certain stench or smell that comes with the werewolf or the Dogman?
I have. A lot of the sightings are made from automobiles that are driving by and see it on the side of the road. And so, of course, they've usually got the windows rolled up or they go past too quickly. But people who have been caught out in the open with it, God have mercy on their souls, will often report that it smells something like what they usually describe as the worst dirty dog smell you could imagine, where you had a dog that hadn't had a bath in months and had peed on itself and, you know, a strong urine smell, just a horrible dirty dog smell.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit different. Normally, the Bigfoot, I think, they compare to sort of a skunky odor.
Mm-hmm.
So even the smell is different. But it's what you'd expect from being close to probably any wild animal. I doubt that a timber wolf or a bear would smell really great if you were a few feet away from them either.
Yeah, something tells me they're any wild animal, their hygienes aren't quite up to our standards. So I think that makes sense.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, you had mentioned that you know, one thing they seem to have in common is that they're near water beds or some type of water source. But if you had a map up of the United States and you had to thumbtack, are there certain parts of the U.S. that you find these to be more populated, these sightings?
Well, that's a great question. And actually, in my latest book, The Michigan Dogman, Werewolf, and Other Unknown Canines Across the USA, it just came out last November, I have a map in the back where I have sort of thumbtacked the major sightings. And it's very interesting because over the 20 years that I've been mapping them, there tends to be a definite pattern showing up. And the greatest concentration is in the states around the Great Lakes. It follows down around Lake Michigan and then up over the other Great Lakes toward, all the way up toward New York State through Ohio and Pennsylvania. But then there are sort of two feeder legs that branch off from this main one. One heads down toward through Oklahoma, which is quite the hot spot lately.
Oh my.
Down into Texas. Yep. And then the other one goes down to the southern states, more like Alabama, Georgia, that way. So it's almost like there are migratory routes.
Yeah, so they're like using the water for transfer, making sure they're close to a water source as they travel or migrate then, right?
Well, that seems to be part of it. And, you know, also, if they are natural canines of some sort, it is part of their nature to, you know, for males to seek out new territory. And they would, I think, also probably branch out in the directions that provided some sort of cover of some kind. And also prey, you know, where I don't know if they're following highways because there's so much wonderful free roadkill now that, you know, is
yeah, that, I mean, that's actually a good point. I never really thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the waterbed for fish, maybe for shallow waterbeds, but if there are, you know, if they've learned to adapt to highways and vehicles, that's a good point.
Right, and like any protein-eating animal, natural wolves need to have a lot of water because that's how they digest the protein. They need the water in order to, you know, because they aren't eating a lot of plants and vegetables with it or anything like that. But then you can also flip back and say, well, maybe their physical animals need the water, or perhaps it goes along with the Native American theory that they're coming from the spirit world, which has entered and exited through fresh springs and water sources. And if you think about it, too, these sites are also the same type of sites that have been coveted both for sacred areas and for military installations forever. And this is someplace with a water source, with a high elevation, so that, you know, if it's a military source, of course, you want to be up above your enemies. And if it's a sacred source, usually hills and mountains and high places are considered sacred worldwide. And so you start wondering if there is some connection to these sacred places. And most of, I don't think I really answered this fully before, but while our indigenous people nationwide have a great variety of different sorts of legends and culture stories that involve these types of animals and others, there is one fairly common one that most tribes I've talked to seem to have a version of, and that is that both this creature and the Bigfoot are what they call spirit animals, and that they can come and go between our world and the spirit world. We might call that another dimension, at will. When they're here, they're completely corporeal. They can leave tracks. They need to eat flesh for energy. But in both cases, there is some ancient business with humans that forbids them from eating us, which would explain, you know, why these people find themselves out in the wild with a wild creature, and it scares them and then runs away, when obviously it could overpower them and you know, tear them to pieces in a minute if they wanted to. So really, in a lot of ways, the Native American explanation addresses many of the observations that witnesses have made. And it's really hard for me to rule out either one.
You know, that kind of reminds me of when people are talking about Bigfoot. One of the things that eventually always comes up is, how can we never find their bodies? How can we never find, you know, a skeletal remains or anything? And that would make sense in that Native American theory. But then wouldn't that also apply, couldn't we say that to any cryptid animal? I mean, the chupacabra or any of those, we could say the same thing.
Well, it would. The only difference is that with these creatures, and I've often said this, if you were out walking in the woods and you came across a dead Bigfoot, you would know what you had.
Right.
I mean, you know, there's nothing else like it. You've got an 8-foot primate lying there. But if you were walking through the woods or driving down the highway, and this has actually been reported to me, and you saw a huge, gigantic, wolf-like creature lying in the road, and maybe the only thing different about it as it lay there dead was that its paws were a little longer. You just go, oh, it's got kind of weird paws. But you would just think that you had a big, dead wolf-dog hybrid or wolf or dog. You know,
right.
You wouldn't think that it was that out of place. And I've had people report this to me, and in a couple of instances they've seen something lying there that was so big it almost stretched across the road, and kind of finally dared to go back and look for it, and then it was gone from the road. So but I do think that these creatures are different than, say, the chupacabras or the Bigfoot, because they could look like a natural animal. And from many, many reports, I know that if they feel they're being observed, they will try usually to assume that four-legged posture, and then they could pass for just about anything, you know. So they can look totally natural without having to transform or do anything magical to do it.
Well, and shifting gears here a little bit, I know that when movies come out, like Paranormal State came out, and Tim, you may agree with me on this, it made things really difficult for paranormal teams in that we started getting inundated with claims of demonic activity, and everybody had a demon, and, you know, and they were all describing everything going on in their home the same way that was going on in that movie. Now, that may just be that their awareness was there, but we definitely saw an increase in those types of claims. Mm-hmm. And then you have the Twilight series come out, and now you've got the werewolf in Twilight in those books. And obviously that's something different, you know, where you're talking about a human assuming a werewolf form. But still, that series has just gone like mad. It's gone crazy. Have you noticed an increase in reports to you in those types of claims, and have that changed the way that people are reporting the claims of what they're seeing?
Well, you would think that if these were just culturally influenced reports, that that would be the case, but it really hasn't. I just received a report from Oroville, California, of somebody who had a sighting a few weeks ago, and what he described could have been one of the original Bray Road sightings, except he had never heard of Bray Road at the time when he saw the creature, but just in the way it behaved, the way it looked. The thing is, with the Hollywood werewolf, they all sort of go back to this mythos that was created by the earliest werewolf movies. It really was largely a creation of Hollywood. Not the idea that people could transform into wolves, but the idea that you had this slow transformation where you'd see the human features slowly go canine and the fangs would appear you can just picture the Lon Chaney type of thing. And really, the Jacob werewolf in the Twilight series is not all that different from this, because it's still, it's a human, and you see it morphing, and then it becomes the animal. And really, this is not what people see at all. They see something that is pretty much full, with a few exceptions, and I do always like to... I don't like to leave out things that are merely inconvenient for my theories, so I include these in the books as well. But they just really are not the same thing at all. And I do, in fact, for a joke in my presentations, I like to show a slide of Team Jacob, and then I make my points about really werewolves make terrible boyfriends. they smell like dog urine. They never want to take you out any place good. They have big commitment issues.
So
you never know what they're going to be from one day to the next. So
right.
It's to me, that's a whole different mythos and very, very different from what people are observing and telling me about in most cases.
Well, I'm glad to see that it hasn't changed and that people aren't now flooding you with emails about having seen somebody instantaneously turn into a werewolf, and it can be a little frustrating when you know you've got a certain focus or a certain type of thing that you're really trying to research, and then you've got this type of interest being pushed in on you.
Well, I do sometimes get calls that are kind of like that, but I'll tell you what, they're not from people who claim they've seen it, they're from people who claim they do it. Somebody will call me and say, hey, lay off us werewolves. Every full moon I change and I go through this whole thing. And I've actually heard this, you'd be kind of surprised how many people I've heard this from. And I have a standard answer, which is, while I respect their experience, I don't know exactly what they're going through, but if they feel that they are literally transforming into a wolf, then please, at the next full moon, have their significant other chain them up in the basement and set up a video camera where they can't destroy it and film the change, and then you don't even need to send it to me. Heck, if you had that, you could put it on YouTube and probably get $1 million for it yourself, And so far, nobody has done that. When that speaks volumes to me. If people really were able to do this, I think that it would be all over YouTube right now, don't you?
Oh, you bet.
For sure, yeah. Now, Linda, I know you, by the way, Linda Godfrey is our guest this evening, talking about werewolves and dogmen and man-wolves or whatever there's so many different names out there. Do you have one specific name you like to go with on them?
Well, again, this is something that I sort of tear my hair out over. really, the very best word is probably creature.
Yeah.
Or unknown upright canine, neither of which my publishers consider very sexy words.
Yeah.
They all like the term werewolf because actually I've used it myself because it gives you a very succinct mental image of what we're talking. They do look sort of like the transformed werewolf because they're walking on their hind legs. They're using their front paws in ways you don't expect a canine to use it. I came up in my second book, Hunting the American Werewolf, I came up with the term man-wolf, which I started using because I just think it has a little less of that Hollywood baggage than the term werewolf. And it seems to sort of describe it because people are seeing a wolf that acts in ways that reminds them of the way a man would act or a human. But I don't always use it, and I really try more and more as I can to get more toward upright canine, because that's the actual descriptor of what people are seeing. They're seeing an upright canine that behaves in unusual ways. And again, with a few exceptions, there are some weird ones out there too. But I don't necessarily discount those, because I do think that there is a supernatural world, and I'm not sure that the people who see these supernatural things aren't seeing something entirely different. You know, perhaps there is a supernatural mimic of the natural phenomenon. Perhaps they're seeing something that is created, you know, a thought form materialized, like the Tibetan tulpa, or like many Native American shamans are supposed to be able to do when they create what's called skinwalkers or skin changers, a sort of shape-shifting type thing.
Yeah.
So I think that it's possible that not every report comes from the same source.
Now, I know you've worked with Monster Quest. I've seen the programs. You've been on television researching. You do all the research for your books. You've been everywhere searching for this creature. Have you personally seen what you believe to be a dog man or a man dog or a man wolf, or at least seen maybe the footprints, that there's just two dog prints there where there should be four? What have you personally experienced?
Well, I have seen the footprints and photographed them. There was an episode in June of 2007 where several people were actually chased by one of these things down a road on kind of a lonely trail that leads to Lake Michigan, passes a few cornfields, and I was able to go out there within a few days and look just around the area for footprints, and we found a mud hole that was not on the road where they would have seen it, where I was able to photograph 8-inch long painted type prints, and I sent the photographs to Wisconsin's foremost BNR wolf expert, and he agreed that they looked like wolf prints, but he was at a loss to explain why they were 8 inches long when there were also deer prints in the same mud hole that had not spread and that were just the ordinary size of normal deer prints. You could see where the deer had sprung out, pushed in with its hind legs because it had been surprised by this thing that was walking on 8-inch, and it wasn't that the whole print was 8 inches, and I've seen, I have other photographs of this and also witness drawings of the same thing. It's kind of like when they jump and land, that heel or ankle joint comes down and touches almost in the way that our heel would do, but not quite, and it makes it appear like a longer print, but then the front ones are spread out and have the claws that would be typical of a canine, so that's the way you also know that it's not a feline print. So I have seen these prints, and they really are the best evidence. I may have seen part of one of these creatures, and I actually started out the Michigan Dogman, Werewolf, and Other Unknown Canines book with this incident. It happened when I was in Michigan filming with Monster Quest. We were on this very lonely gravel road in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by swamps, thickets, and mosquitoes. It was storming. The likelihood that anybody else was out there was extremely slim. They would have had to have been miserable if there was someone in a fursuit. But we kept seeing something running just outside the camera range and the spotlight range. We saw yellow eyes glaring at us from the darkness, which humans don't have eyeshine. I at one point heard, anybody who's a dog owner knows the sound of a dog shaking out its wet coat.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And I heard that like twice as loud as any normal dog 30 feet in the bushes away from me. And then at one point, I saw something run across the road just beyond the range of the spotlight so that it lit up just the fur on this creature's back, about an inch of the fur. And the creature was upright. Whatever it was gray fur. And it was tall enough that when it passed a reflective road sign, it blotted out part of that road sign, and we measured later, and it would have had to be 7 feet tall to do
wow.
So. So, and I talk about this that freaked out. We had the witnesses with us at that time, and they were so freaked out, they insisted on leaving at that point. We could not make them stay there any longer. It was about two in the morning, I think, at the time.
Amazing.
And that ended the evening festivities.
Yeah. In your research for the Dogman, have you come across any evidence that maybe would have been a possible Bigfoot or any other type of the cryptid animals out there?
Well, I don't know that I've actually seen any kind of Bigfoot evidence myself, but I have had really good Bigfoot sightings from people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And given off a lot to see an actual Bigfoot print. I've gone out and looked for them. I had one really only maybe 10 miles from Bray Road, maybe less than that, just this past summer. That was a definite Bigfoot sighting, and was able to go out with a friend and canvass the whole area. But the ground at the time was much too hard to make any kind of footprints, so that nothing showed up. But I'll tell you, I personally know some of these people. Two of the best Bigfoot sightings came from, they were each witnessed by middle-aged couples who were just on their way to somewhere, and both of them saw the same thing, so it rules out hallucination. You know, these are not young male pranksters, which is your usual hoaxer. They were just completely convinced of what they saw. One of them took a lie detector test, or a polygraph, for one of the Monster Quest shows, and passed with flying colors. So, to me, the Bigfoot sightings that I do have a record of are very convincing on their own for many reasons. I only wish that I had the actual hair from one or an actual footprint. That would be the icing on the cake.
I think it's pretty obvious and clear that there's one thing that the creatures that you look for, Linda, and the ghosts that Chris and I look for, if there's one thing they've all got in common, they never seem to show up when you're looking for them. They show up when they're least expected. The person who's surprised that the creature, the ghost, is there, they're not looking for them. They just appear. That seems to be the way of this.
Right. Although, you know, I've had better luck with ghosts than with the werewolves. I actually, I spent quite a bit of time when I was writing Weird Michigan and Strange Wisconsin and co-authoring Strange Michigan and Weird Wisconsin. I had to go into an awful lot of places that were supposed to be haunted. And in two places, I actually did see what I would have to call a ghost, you know, some kind of unidentifiable white figure that was totally unexplainable in any other way. And both times, I had a camera around my neck for the express purpose of taking a picture of something like that if I saw it, and was too shocked and terrorized to even move or do anything, much less take the picture.
So, not the first time I've heard that. I mean, that's, again, that, and I wonder if Chris and I, the day we ever finally see, and I shouldn't speak for you, Chris, I don't know if you've ever seen the full body apparition. I know I have not. In the 10 years of doing this, I often wonder, though, the moment it happens, will I be able to get that camera shooting, you know?
Yeah, and neither one of the ones I saw were full body. One was, it looked like a white, wispy torso, human torso, floating above the floor at about the right height. And the other one appeared in the shape of a glowing, huge, basketball-sized white thing with projections from either side that were almost like little wings. And it was only about 8 feet away from me. And we were standing in pitch black in this haunted basement. And I thought, I can't be seeing this. I turned my head away and looked back, and it was still there. And that's when I got really scared, and it persisted, you know. And so finally I looked away again, and then it started fading, but it didn't just blink out as if it hadn't been there. However, the woman who was with me, this is the really interesting thing, she told me that she saw a full-bodied apparition. So somehow whatever this energy was filtered itself differently through our different brains so that we perceived it in different ways.
I've heard people say that before, that it's more impressed upon us, you know, how we see them is impressed upon us, if I'm saying that right.
Yeah, that's kind of the feeling I had about this. I will tell you, all I wanted to do was get out of that basement. I did not have a good feeling at all.
Wow.
It felt
That's what makes us weird, because we want to get into that basement. So if you've got the address, Tim, you want to go?
Let's go. Road trip.
It's written up in Weird Michigan.
Actually, I got to tell you real quick here, Linda, and I just want to take this moment that I've got you here. One of the most entertaining, one of my favorite books I have in my collection, and I have hundreds of books on the paranormal and weird. Weird Michigan is one of my favorites. I love that book. Thank you for writing that.
Oh, thank you. Well, thank you so much for saying so. I think I put 5,000 miles on my car.
It's not a small state for sure.
Oh, it's huge. You know, by the time you get through the UP and everything, but I loved every second of it.
Yeah,
it's a great state.
It's a great book. Anyone who's from the area obviously needs to get it, but anyone who just loves weird stories, and I'm sure all the states have the weird books now. That was a chain that was going around. So, but Weird Michigan was just fantastic. I loved it.
Well, if you look under Basement Billy, that's what he's known as locally.
I will, after the show tonight, I'm checking that one out, Basement Billy. I'll get the address, Chris.
it tells right where it is.
Perfect.
We were talking a little bit before the show about Oklahoma, and then you mentioned that it was a hotbed recently. So which book do I need to get to read about Oklahoma?
Well, I think I have a few in Hunting the American Werewolf, but the Mother Lode is in the latest book, The Michigan Dog Man, Werewolves, and Other Unknown Canines. And I've got it. Chapter 6 is completely devoted to Oklahoma. I call it Oklahoma Beasts from Atoka to Antlers.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, and they're really amazing sightings. You know, I was just kind of floored at how many they were and how there are clusters of them and you know, that they seem to have some history, too. They're not just all, some of them go back to the 70s. And, you know, Muskogee.
So it really is all over the map then.
Yes.
I'll have to pick that up. I know you were talking with our booking and promotions guy, Larry. He's got to get it. So we'll definitely be picking up our copies.
That's great. Thank you.
You know, everybody that's listening, I know they're going to want to know more. Where can they go? What is your web address? Which one should they use? I've got several for you. So which one should they use if they want to be able to find out more about you and more about what you're doing or even how to contact you?
Well, a good starter place is my site, Beast of Bray Road, BRAY Road.com. It's a site that's getting a little outdated. I stopped posting on the blog there a couple of years ago, and instead I post mostly on my MySpace blog and Twitter when I have new sightings. But this site has all the links. If you go to the main layer page, you'll see where you can click on to report a sighting, and they all come directly to me. I don't have any minions, unfortunately, or assistants. It's just me here. So it shows you where to click on for sightings. It also has a books page that you can go to for a listing of the book. You can order some of them directly from me if you want an autographed copy. And then there are also links to other places and a frequently asked question page, which, by the way, saves a lot of people a lot of very basic questions. It sort of gives you the main lowdown right there. So I recommend starting with beastofbrayroad.com, and it has the links to my MySpace and my Twitter and all the other places too.
Awesome. That sounds great.
All right. And Linda, real quick, off the top of your head, how many books have you authored now?
Right now, 12. The 13th one, Monsters of Wisconsin, is coming out in July. And I'm working on number 14, which will, I hope, it'll actually be my fifth book on werewolves, and I hope kind of the definitive one with Tarcher Penguin of New York, and that will be out in 2012.
All right, fantastic. She has traveled the world in search of the werewolf, and you just heard it all here tonight. Linda Godfrey, thank you so much for being with us on Taps Family Radio.
It was a great time. Thanks again for having me.
Thanks, Linda.
Our pleasure. You're We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more from TFR here on Jackalope Radio.
When you hear strange noises in the night, when unexplained shadows move through the halls, when you feel there's nowhere you can turn, we're here to help. The Southern Paranormal and Anomaly Research Society. We're a proud TAPS family member with chapters in Mississippi, Georgia, and South Carolina. Our dedicated team of investigators is ready to assist you. With professionalism and the utmost discretion, we'll help you understand what you've been experiencing. The Southern Paranormal and Anomaly Research Society. Because at times like this, you don't simply need proof. You need answers. For more information, visit us on the web at www.spars-paranormal.com.
When you need to know what goes bump in the night, contact the Wausau Paranormal Research Society, serving the entire state of Wisconsin. Investigations are free of charge and completely confidential. You'll receive objective, scientific analysis of the activity in your home. The goal is to provide you with a rational explanation for what you're seeing or hearing. The Wausau Paranormal Research Society, where the paranormal and reality meet. To schedule an investigation, visit WPRS.net.
And welcome back to Taps Family Radio. Tim Ellis, Chris Perkins with you on this Tuesday evening. There we go. Kind of puts a whole new spin. We want to thank Linda Godfrey for being with us, but kind of puts a whole new spin on the werewolf. All of a sudden makes the Hollywood werewolf seem a little more possible to be real in our world.
She's so interesting. You know, it's nice to see that there's somebody who's really looking at something that's not so Hollywood werewolf, like we talked about Twilight and all of that. Pretty neat. Right. I'd like to grab her book, definitely.
Yeah, she's a great author, great presenter. If you ever get a chance to go to anywhere across the U.S., she speaks at a lot of conventions and conferences. So if you ever get a chance to see Linda Godfrey, definitely do so, because she does a great presentation on the Dogman legend. So definitely check that out. Let's see. What do we got? I think it's time for some mailbag right now, isn't it?
It is. And I have a really interesting question. You know, I wish I had seen this when we were talking to Linda. This comes from Vu in our chat room, and he's in Alaska, and he says that up in Alaska, the natives worship the thunderbird, and that this bird is huge, the size of a small plane, from what they hear, and he wants to know how come something so big cannot be found, even though Alaska is mostly remote, you would think that something would be found.
And right.
You know, we were kind of getting to that, and Linda made a good point about, you know, the werewolf, if it dies, nobody's going to think that much about the bones they find. They're going to think it's a canine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what about something this big?
Well, and again, I think we kind of touched on this even with Linda, because we were talking about one of the many theories of why creatures such as maybe the Dogman or more so the Bigfoot, and this would actually go right along with this too, the Thunderbird. You know, there's a couple theories. One theory is that we never find the body of a Bigfoot, and the same could be said for the Thunderbird, because they travel in packs, and you know, the dead are always taken with them. Or, you know, there's also, and I know we touched on this with Linda, the whole interdimensional thing going on with cryptids too. So, you know, it's possible maybe that's the same thing with the Thunderbirds.
Yeah, the whole interdimensional thing just blows my mind. I love going there thinking about this, because it opens up the possibilities just wide open.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, if the whole interdimensional thing, you know, our dimension crossing with theirs, and that's how we see them, and vice versa, yeah, that just opens up, you know, Pandora's box to what is possible of what we see on our in our world. Absolutely.
Crazy to think about. I do have one more question. It's a little bit basic, but I think there's some more we can say about this. The question is, can the paranormal affect your dreams or be part of them? And I think definitely anything you experience or anything that you think or believe you're experiencing can affect your dreams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and influence what you're going to dream at night. Our daily routines affect our dreams. But as far as interaction, I know, you know, people will claim visitations in their dreams, you know, either from loved ones or even, you know, on a scarier thing, which I'm not sure how much weight I put on this, but from darker entities entering their dream state. So I would say, you know, with anything else, as we know, we're kind of guessing. We're really kind of guessing when we answer this type of question, because we don't even have proof that these things exist, let
right.
alone whether or not they can affect our dreams. But I think anything that we're thinking about deeply or that affects our daily life can enter our dream.
Yeah, and especially for those folks who don't believe in ghosts or believe in spirits or whatnot, the theory and the idea is that when we as humans, if we are taught not to believe in ghosts, they don't exist, we can't see them, but when we sleep, we are seeing with what a lot of people call our third eye, and that's our, you know, our inner self, and they say that's when all of the rules that we are taught are broken down, and that's the easiest for the other side to come and visit and to come and communicate. So there is a field of thought that says that absolutely that is when they come see you the most is in your dreams, because all of our preconceived notions that they can't exist in our world are gone, are broken down because we're asleep. We don't have that defense mechanism built up while we're sleeping.
Well, and so there goes the whole theory, don't worry, it was just a dream. Right?
Exactly.
Or was it? Yeah. You know, it's also when they say that our subconscious tries to come to terms with things and to work out things we're not sure about. So that could partially be that, too. You know, I'm always trying to pull the kind of common sense back into it. but I know personally, even like when I suffered personal loss, I wanted that visitation. So.
Yep.
I like to believe it's still possible. I do like to, but whether or not we have proof of that, I don't know.
And you know, and that's the people who don't believe what we were just talking about basically is say, you know, that we are taught to believe that those are actual visitations for comfort reasons because it makes us feel good that they were there. So it really comes, to me, it's what fits your personal belief and what makes you feel right. And, you know, if you believe that you were truly visited and it makes you feel better and it gives you closure, that's the truth. A person's perception is reality for that person.
That's true. And that's one thing we try to keep in mind when we go to investigations, you know, and I'm sure you do too. If you're contacted by a client and their claims are just the most outlandish thing you've ever heard, if it's real to that person, it's real. And you need to address it because they're truly terrified no matter how off the wall it is. And we've had some pretty out there claims, and I know you have too, some that you look at and you go, this just can't be happening. It doesn't matter because their reality is their perception, and if they believe, just like you said, and if they believe it's happening and going on the way they're stating it is, you're going to have to address it that way too.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So, you have to be aware of that and focus on that too when you're dealing with these people, because a lot of times when we're dealing with families and individuals who have lost loved ones, I mean, it borderlines, you know, psychological evaluation, and that's where you have to be careful that don't overstep the line and try to become a psychologist to these people. But hopefully your team either has a psychologist on it or you know someone who works through your team and you can get people help that way.
I agree, and a lot of times it's just to the point of just leading them to some type of grief counseling, if that's what they're going through, finding a good grief counselor.
Yep. So, boy, wow, two great questions tonight. One on the Thunderbird, which, I can't think of the last time I've ever had to answer a question on the Thunderbird, although I love the legend, and one on dream visitations. Very good. Personally, I am a believer in the dream visitation theory.
I am too.
It's just something that... feels right to me, and it's just something I believe in. So, well, Chris, you are not done for the evening, huh? You are radio extraordinaire tonight. Why don't you tell everyone where they can continue to listen to Miss Perkins on the radio tonight?
Well, I know they've probably grown tired of my voice already, but if they'll just stick around a little bit tonight, I promise you they will not be disappointed, not because of me, but because of the guest Larry has. You know, she was on TFR on the last show. She is an amazing author, and her name is Marie Jones. She's going to be on Larry's show, Paracom Radio. Larry is our booking and promotions gentleman from Tax Family Radio. They can listen to the show. They can tune in. It's from 7:30 to 9 o'clock. They can get to the show by going to www.norsonline.com. That's norsonline.com. And they have a chat room set up something like ours, and they will be able to throw some questions out. The Paracom Radio is a very, they try to just kind of relax and go with the flow, and it's going to be a nice, comfortable atmosphere just to ask Marie anything we want. She's a very down-to-earth lady. I enjoy talking to her immensely. So I'm really looking forward to because I missed her on the last show. So this is my makeup chance.
Yeah, I'm really happy for you because I knew even before we were even talking about getting Marie on as a guest, I remember hearing you talk about her and how you loved her theories and loved her books. And then when I found out we were going to have her as a guest, I was really excited for you. And then I found out you couldn't be here. So I'm really excited for you that you're going to get a chance to talk with her, because like I said, when we had her on 2 weeks ago, we could have kept talking for an entire another hour. This woman is fascinating with her theories, and she's definitely tied in and tuned into the paranormal in a good way. And you're going to love talking with her.
She's amazing, and what I really like about her is she takes something as complex
as quantum physics and puts it down on a level where I can go, you know what, I get it. That's what I really like about her.
Exactly. Well, we are getting ready to wrap things up here. Thank you, everyone, once again for tuning in and supporting Taps Family Radio, because we couldn't do what we do without you. If you're not out there listening, we have no reason to have a show here. So we thank you once again. Don't forget, find us on our brand new website, tapsfamilyradio.net. tapsfamilyradio.net. Share it with everyone. Let people come on in and check it out. We've got our chat room in there. We've also got in there as well archives from all of our past shows. You can also follow us on Facebook. We encourage you to come on to Facebook too. That is just Facebook.com/TapsFamilyRadio. Now, keep in mind, there's a few other Taps Family Radio sites out there. One is a fan page and another one is from in the past. So just make sure you get the updated one with myself and Chris Perkins on it, and you will be good to go to follow us throughout the World Wide Web. Also, email address, if you want to send in mailbag questions, Chris, where can they send those to?
Oh, I love mailbag questions. Those are awesome. They can be about anything. They can be, well, you know, we've agreed cooking is not our specialty, but they can be about Taps. They can be about our groups. They can be about anything paranormal related. Just send them right to me, tfradiochris, K-R-I-S, @gmail.com.
Wonderful. And also, Cormac, our producer, also said for listeners, feel free to send in music requests too, because Cormac will put in music throughout the show as well, and he's always looking for requests from the listeners. Again, you can also find us on Jackalope Radio, our new home, jackaloperadio.com. Check out the site. They have amazing shows on there. Thank you once again for tuning in. On behalf of Chris Perkins and myself, Tim Ellis, this is Taps Family Radio, live from Jackalope Radio. Good night.
You've been listening to Taps Family Radio, the safest place in the paranormal world. Join us every Tuesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, 4 Mountain, and 3 Pacific on the new home for Taps Family Radio, Jackalope Radio.